Welcome again to BadQuaker.com podcast. Today is Tuesday, October 4th, 2011. I wanted to go over a couple of things that are floating around. These are a couple of videos that are getting a lot of airtime on the internet. One of which is a fairly famous Michael Moore speaking with Piers Morgan. Sorry about that. Piers Morgan on CNN. And the other is, and in that video, Michael Moore just shows his complete stupidity and ignorance. The other is Ron Paul on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, who was fairly recent. I think it was about a week ago. The Michael Moore one was a little newer. I think it was maybe from about Thursday or Friday of last week. And although the Michael Moore video was primarily, if you watch the thing in its entirety, I believe it's focusing on the question of the Occupy Wall Street folks and the protests that are going on with Occupy Wall Street. I believe that's the main focus of the whole interview with Piers Morgan, if you see the whole thing. But the part that's going viral is the little segment where Michael Moore attempts to explain what he thinks in his tiny little ignorant mind is capitalism and what's wrong. And Piers Morgan gives him a couple pointed questions, but doesn't really have any kind of teeth to the questions and doesn't really follow up in any way. The other one with Ron Paul is a pretty good little, I think it's about a 10-minute shot. It's available. I'll try to put links to both these videos. But the one with Ron Paul is actually on Ron Paul's site, and it's also on The Daily Show's site. And there's a common, I think, in my mind, there's a common flaw in both of these two, whether it's Ron Paul talking to Jon Stewart, or whether it's Piers Morgan questioning Michael Moore. There's a disconnect. It's kind of like, it's kind of like one person is speaking one language and the other person is speaking the other language, and both of them assume that the other is fully fluent in their own language. So you've got, you know, one person sitting here speaking French, and the other person doesn't speak a word of French, and he's talking away in German. And they're just happy as can be, thinking each other understands the other, and neither one of them are talking about the same thing. In addition, I'm sorry for all the Ron Paul fans out there, but I really don't think Ron Paul did a good job at all in explaining his concepts and his ideas to Jon Stewart. I think he just spoke right past him, assuming that Jon Stewart was one of us being libertarian-minded people who already understand these things. And I think that's a major problem with Ron Paul whenever he speaks. I think that's the reason why mainstream media think that he's nuts, and I think that's why they portray him that way to the rest of the world. And to a large extent, I think that's why your average Joe walking down the street, not only does he think Ron Paul is crazy because the media says Ron Paul is crazy, but also because when Ron Paul talks, it goes right past him. He didn't have a clue what Ron Paul's talking about. So what I wanted to do, I'm going to go through through Jon Stewart's questions that Jon Stewart gave to Ron Paul on The Daily Show. And then I'm going to mention the answers. I'm going to get as close as possible to word for word on Jon Stewart's questions. And then I'll kind of recap Ron Paul's questions and maybe look at them from a different point of view. And then I'm not going to give Michael Moore that much effort. You know, I'm gonna kind of throw out what the gist of what Piers Morgan was saying, and then I'm gonna throw out the gist of what Michael Moore was saying, actually, you probably to get a better analysis of that, I think Gary North did a better job of explaining the the confusion in that interview than I'll ever be able to. But Gary North's not here handy, so I'm gonna give a shot at it. Okay, let's start with the Jon Stewart, Ron Paul video. Jon Stewart starts by asking a question that is asked of Ron Paul and Ron Paul's supporters constantly, and that is, what is it about your candidacy that they so easily dismiss, and can you get elected? Ron Paul's answer to him was, I've been elected quite a few times, but they don't want to hear the message, and they don't understand what I'm saying. They don't understand the freedom. They don't understand what I'm talking about with the economy, and they're intimidated, so they just discount it. Now, there's a lot of truth to that. Sure, he has been elected numerous times, but John Stewart is not asking him if he can get elected in a small district in Texas. Clearly, that is not John Stewart's question. John Stewart is asking, are you electable as president of the United States? That is clearly the question, and Ron Paul dodged it. He Bill Clinton'd it. He answered a different question than the one that was asked of him. We don't need to do that. Either Ron Paul can be elected or he can't. Now, I'm thinking of Lou Rockwell. Lou Rockwell's done a lot of interviews in the last month, and Lou has asked this question in every one of those interviews that I have heard. And Lou answers, yes, Ron Paul can be elected. I don't know that I agree with that. Not the point. If you're going to run for something and somebody's going to ask you that question, you have to answer it directly. Don't defer it off to what you've done in Texas. Answer it right to the point. I can be elected or I can't be elected. I'm trying to make a point in this. Whatever the answer is, be truthful about it and be upfront about it. Now, the fact that Ron Paul said, well, there's a lot of people who don't want to hear the message. That's true, especially those in Washington and in the media. And the other thing he said is they don't understand freedom. They don't understand the economy. And that's all true, too. And they're intimidated by it. But this is a reason why we, including Ron Paul, need to speak these things in a way that they can be understood and not just talk right past our audience. Now, I will say this right now. Ron Paul fans, Ron Paul supporters, are great at explaining these things. Look anywhere on the internet and you can find Ron Paul fans putting out some of the best libertarian information that's ever been put out, and they're doing it in very effective ways. Not all of them. There's some nutcases out there, and there's some people that are just screaming at the stars. But there are some really good explanations of these concepts that are being put out by Ron Paul fans, but Ron Paul's not putting it out. Now, if you go and you buy a Ron Paul book, you get this stuff concise, you get it in a very palatable way, but you're never going to sell enough books to where every book buyer is going to go and vote. That's not a reasonable path towards electoral victory. Okay, let's go on to the next question. So Ron Stewart, that's who he is. No, John Stewart. I'm sorry, John Stewart, like John Stewart would ever hear my podcast. Okay, so John Stewart's second question is, your 10 to 15% supporters are very enthusiastic, but can you broaden that out? Ron Paul's answer is, the message is popular, but with a hardcore dedicated group, the donations come in and the message gets out. Now, Ron Paul is dead on this. You don't need, this is something I think that the mainstream media is missing, and I think a lot of people out there, including general voters who go to the poll every 4 years or every year for their local thing or whatever, I think a lot of voters don't realize this. But there are masses of people in the United States who don't vote. And if a 10 to 15% of very enthusiastic Ron Paul supporters can go out and touch those masses that don't vote, and those people understand the message, and they get off their butts and come in and vote, you can see some pretty amazing things happen. So in this sense, Ron Paul is right. A hardcore, dedicated group of donors and people pushing the message can get the message out and can bring the votes in. The problem is, what I just said a second ago, Ron Paul is not saying that message concisely when he's being interviewed. The Ron Paul supporters have to be the ones that are doing the legwork. The next question, John Stewart jokingly says, have you thought about flip-flopping to be more like the other candidates? And there's some joking there. And Ron Paul misses the perfect opportunity to point out the obvious that Ron Jon Stewart set him up for. Jon Stewart set him up for this question, and Ron Paul just let the ball go right by. And the point is that Ron Paul has always been consistent on these issues. As a matter of fact, the libertarian position, I've said this before in the whole we're conservative on some things and liberal on other things. No, we're not. No, we're not. That's wrong. That is dead wrong. That is unproductive, and it's a lie. It's not true. We are consistent. We are 100% consistent. Libertarianism, if you take the zero aggression principle and libertarian view of property rights, and you apply that consistently, then it doesn't matter how everybody else explains what you believe. You're believing a consistent belief based on principles that don't change. And that has to be the message with libertarianism. You're never going to sell a libertarianism by saying, well, we're a little bit warm and a little bit cold. We're a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll. That is not what we are. That is a lie. That is a lie put upon us by our enemies. And it's deception. So be straight about it. Be honest. And point out the principles that we are based on. Don't try to bend your message to be like everybody else. And Ron Paul misses that opportunity here. He could have said, well, the reason they flip-flop is because they don't have any principles to begin with. Ron Paul could have gone for the jugular of every other candidate, and even the ones who haven't officially announced. He could have done that. But, you know, people say, well, he's a nice guy. He is a nice guy. And that's a problem. Okay, so we get past the joking. And Jon Stewart asks a killer question here. He says, does the failure of government to protect adequately, he's talking about regulations, does the failure of government to protect adequately make it so they shouldn't do it? In other words, oh, well, he clarified the question in a sort of a sub-question. He said, wouldn't you rather have people regulating who are accountable to voters rather than corporations regulating themselves accountable only to shareholders? Now, that's Jon Stewart reformulating his question. Now, this is the perfect opportunity. This is like a slow pitch coming in. I mentioned a second ago that the ball went right past Ron and he didn't even swing at it. Well, this is like a slow pitch coming in, and Ron Paul has the perfect opportunity to put it right out of the park. And what does he do? He bunts, and he just takes off walking towards first. This is what his answer was. He says something like, in, you know, that Holmesy way he talks, well, you know, regulations are stricter in the marketplace. And then he talks about the housing industry and the bubbles, and he never really addresses John's question. And then he says, in a true libertarian society, the regulations would be tougher. He just reiterated what he had just said, and he never explains how that, what mechanism is there. Now, this would have been the perfect opportunity for him to take Jon Stewart back to his own words and say, okay, A, does the failure of government to protect adequately make it so they shouldn't do it? Let's say you have pain in your arm, and so you go to your doctor, and you're like, hey, I got pain in my arm. And he takes your money, and he spends some time, and he does this and that, and he didn't really fix the pain in your arm. And then you go to somebody and he's like, well, you know, why don't you go to a different doctor? Well, because, you know, why would I? Does the failure of my doctor to fix what's wrong with my arm cause me to want to go to another doctor? Oh, yeah. That's kind of what a good idea would be described as, maybe, you know? Let's try something different. Let's say you go to an auto mechanic and your car doesn't run very smooth and it keeps dying on you every time you stop the stop sign. And so you take your car to an auto mechanic and you're like, hey, every time I stop the stop sign, my car dies. And the auto mechanic is like, okay, let's see what we can do. So he charges you thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. He maybe drafts your children into the military against their will. He maybe gets involved in a few foreign wars. And in the end, your car still doesn't run. Is the logic to just continue to go back to the same mechanic? I'm thinking maybe that's what an idiot is called. A person who keeps doing the same stupid thing over and over, trusting the same people to solve the same problem. When they don't solve the problem and they just continually make things worse, you go, well, what am I going to do? Ask somebody else? Yeah, maybe. That might be something you could do. And so that's the perfect opportunity to leap on this answer, on this question, and answer it. Yes, the government has utterly failed. The government is the biggest polluter in the world. The United States government and every other government, governments in general, the state, I should say the state, and not separate it out into individual governments. The state is the worst polluter in the world. Always has been. So what you have to do is you have to reverse this back on the questioner. Does the failure of government to protect adequately make it so they shouldn't do it? Or, in John Stewart's sub-question or rephrase question, wouldn't you rather have people regulating who are accountable to voters rather than corporations regulating themselves accountable only to shareholders? Okay, so let's deal with the fallacy first. This part. Wouldn't you rather have people regulating who are accountable to voters? Okay, who in the FDA is accountable to voters? I'll wait. See my point? Who in the USDA is accountable to a voter? I'll wait. You see this? When Congress decided to take it on themselves to outlaw certain types of toilets, you know, ones that work and actually flush on one try, were they accountable to voters? No, they're not accountable to voters. The regulators at the FDA, at the USDA, at any other alphabet agency, they are not accountable to voters. They are not. The people in Congress, the very best argument that the statists can make is, well, but we have Congress. You know what? Who in Congress is accountable to the voters? When the American voting public can be swayed by a sign on a lawn, think about that for a minute. Drive around at election time. Whoever has in your local election, whoever has the most signs in yards wins the election. Is that accountability to voters? Or is that donations equal votes? If the corporations, who are the people who are supposed to be regulated, theoretically, if the corporations can get enough money and enough influence into the pockets of the congressional people, of the elected officials, then the voters don't matter. There is no voter accountability. The person gets elected who has all the mechanisms to get them elected, and voters are a tiny little piece of that that almost never matter. Oh, but what about the Republican Revolution and the Reagan Revolution and all the new people that were elected? Did anything change? No. We went back to the same mechanic and he still didn't fix your car. You know why? It's the same mechanic. Oh, but they threw the bad guys out. They threw the bum out. They threw the bums out. Did they? Did they really? Who changed? Of the people in Washington who really count, who really make the decisions, who really guide the parties, those guys don't change. They don't get tossed out of office. And when they do, on the rare occasion that one of them might get separated out and accidentally get beat and somebody else comes in, they always make sure that the incoming guy is either one of them or he can be made to become one of them very quickly. There is no accountability to the voters. Period. Open your eyes. It's not there. It hasn't been there. For the conservative, who says, well, if we could just return back to the Constitution and get back to the Republic and how things used to be. Well, I'm thinking of the days when a certain man was running for the office of presidency, and this particular man who ran for the office of presidency owned the largest distilling operation in the country at the time, and he actually set things up so that he could give away free mugs of whiskey if you came down and voted. Now, of course, he didn't actually go in with you and make sure you voted for him. That's beside the point. This guy gave out free whiskey if you came down and voted, and it was his brand of whiskey that he was giving away. And he, as I said, was the largest whiskey producer in the country at the time. That was George Washington, and he got elected twice. And right after he got elected the first time, he made sure that a tax got put on the whiskey industry, which harmed his competitors and didn't harm him. So we need to return to the Republic, right? We need to return to the Constitution. We need to return to what our forefathers had and what the founding fathers wanted, right? 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 Because the votes counted then, right? So then, wouldn't you rather have people regulating who are accountable to voters rather than corporations regulating themselves accountable only to shareholders? Who do you think makes regulations today? Lobbyists write regulations. Then they hand them to the scum in our society that we refer to as legislators. Then the legislators fight among themselves until they get the amount of bribes, legal bribes usually, that they need. And then they pass the regulations that the corporations want put in place. That's the reality of how it's done. And Ron Paul knows this, and Ron Paul could have explained that to Jon Stewart right there on the show and explained the difference between capitalism and corporatism, between capitalism and fascism. That's a perfect opportunity to do it right there. And Ron Paul failed. Ron Paul instead went on to say this vague statement that regulations are stricter in the marketplace. And then he talked around in a circle, talked about the housing bubble, and he never really answered Jon Stewart's question, and then he goes back to restate that in a true libertarian society, regulations would be tougher, and he gave no explanation as to what the mechanism was that would cause that to be the case. Yes, regulations would be tougher in a true libertarian society because there would be no regulations, there would be property rights. And property rights make sure that you do not harm your neighbor's property. But Ron Paul did not explain that. It's up to us. It's up to us out here, those of us who know what Ron Paul's talking about, to try to explain this to the masses. The difference is, I can't get on Jon Stewart's show and explain it to millions of people at the same time. That's what we have Ron Paul for, and he didn't do it. Now, Jon Stewart comes back and tries to clarify this rather bold, unsubstantiated statement of Ron Paul's that the libertarian society would somehow be tougher. And Jon Stewart says, you say that in a true libertarian society, the regulations would be tougher. But has that been tried? The magic question that 99% of libertarians don't have an answer to. Let's hear it again. You say that in a true libertarian society, the regulations would be tougher, but has that been tried? This is the giant fish, the giant dead stinky fish that they pick up and slap us in the face with. Oh, you live in a utopia. You want everything to be perfect. You think everybody's just going to be good. But that's never existed in history. There's never been a libertarian society in history. It's never happened. You don't know that it would happen that way. Wrong? How many times do we have to go over all the different examples of how libertarian anarchy exists in the world today in millions of different forms? And functions perfectly. How in the past, whether we're talking about in the western United States before the expansion of the state, whether we're talking about in upland Southeast Asia, how the Zoma people have self-regulated for thousands of years. How many examples do we need? Do we need the Irish example, the pre-Cromwellian Irish example? Do we need the Algonquin Confederacy? Do we need, you know, how many examples are there? Aboriginal Australia, there is example after example after example of some form of libertarian anarchism that was perfectly successful, and we ignore them all, and we just stand there and let them hit us with this stinky fish, and we go, yeah, you got me there. Yep. Ron Paul's answer to this was to say, well, you know, it's been tried. It's never been perfect. But has socialism and authoritarian ever been perfect? That's not a bad answer, except it requires a much larger explanation. It has been tried. As Ron Paul said in answer to John Stewart, it's been tried. It's never been perfect. Well, right there, all you're saying is, don't hit me as hard with that dead fish. He missed this perfect opportunity to go into any of the number of examples that are available. And instead, he just says, well, yeah, it's never been perfect, but hey, socialism and authoritarian have been around too. You know, and they're not perfect. So then John Stewart falls back on this. All right, now you've already handed John Stewart, you've said, first off, the state doesn't work, so we want to try this other thing. And John Stewart says, but the other thing's never been tried. And he, well, it's been tried a little bit, but yeah, not really. Yeah, okay. But the thing we have doesn't work. So then John Stewart is given almost no other choice but to ask this question. He says, is that our choice? Are the extremes the only possibilities? Do we have to choose between total tyranny and totally trusting the free market? And he says, isn't there a common ground of competence? And he's talking about in government. Isn't it possible that government can be competent? At this point, Ron Paul compares socialism and authoritarianism to having a touch of pregnancy. And it's a good joke, and it works well. But he doesn't really explain what he's talking about. He's essentially referring to the slippery slope argument. But then he wanders off into a thing about how we should trust the locals, trust the local state, and trust the local authorities, and that somehow you're going to be freer if you bring government down to the local authority and take it away from the authority in Washington. Okay, now the problem with that is that Ron Paul is making your basic minarchist argument that, you know, the world would be fine if we just bind the federal government somehow. You know, maybe if there was, you know, I don't know, a document? Maybe if we could all agree on a document that had, oh, I don't know, a number of, say, specific articles within it that could say the government can't do this and the government can't do that. Boy, that would work out great, wouldn't it? Oh, wait, didn't we try that? Isn't that the source of our problem to begin with? Trusting that a centralized government in Washington, D.C. would somehow stay small? If you could shrink it down and get it in control and write a document that it would stick by, that it would somehow keep that size and it would stay within its bounds, isn't that what some people call a pipe dream? Isn't that a fantasy? Isn't it possible that it's never worked in history once? That's the thing that doesn't work. Libertarian societies went on for thousands of years. And then the state popped up. The state is the one who has never functioned the way it's supposed to, the way it's sold to us. That could be what's pointed out here, rather than to say, well, yeah, but That's what we want. We want a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And, oh, but you can't be just a little bit pregnant. But we want a little bit of the state to control a little bit of the things in our life, and then we'll be okay. And we have this weird idea that somehow if you bring the state down to a local level, then you can control it. People who think that have never had to deal with a city council. People who think that have never had to deal with state oppression on the local state level. Talk to the folks in California and see if that works out good. Ask someone in New Jersey the next time they want to try to pump their own gas. Hey, how's this going in this local state thing? You guys are living free, right? Okay. At that point, John Stewart asks this obvious question. He says, you're not worried that the states would just develop their own mechanisms for this type of activity? And he's talking about tyranny. So, again, his question, you're not worried that the states would just develop their own mechanism for that type of activity? And Ron Paul's answer was, well, let's hope. This is what he says. Let's hope the people would work it out and make it decent. That's about as silly as trusting Obama when he was saying in 2008 that we just needed to trust him and hope for good and we need a change, hope and change, and just trust me, everything's going to be fine. We've got a better platform than that, folks. Ron Paul has a better platform than that, and Ron Paul's not putting it out. Okay, so let me read Stewart's question again. You're not worried the states would just develop their own mechanisms for that type of activity, talking about tyranny? And Ron Paul's answer, well, let's hope the people would work it out and make it decent. Some states would do better than others, and that was the wonderful part of our country. And then he talks about it, more talk without really addressing Stewart's question, and then he vaguely says, well, you could move to another state, and then he rambles about money and printing money and buying stuff from China, and then he makes this weird thing where he says, well, we're just buying stuff from China with free money, you know, we're just exporting money. Now, I understand what he's talking about. I understand that we're printing up massive amounts of money, and we're dumping it into the economy, and the money is cheaper than it should be, and then we're trading it to the Chinese for things that actually are of value, and we're getting back stuff of value for the garbage paper that we're sending them, and they haven't figured out this scam yet. I understand that. But again, this is a case of where Ron Paul is speaking to his base, and he's not talking to potential voters or an audience that would be very easy to explain to them what he's talking about, but he doesn't. He talks right past them. He's talking German, and the audience is speaking French. So again, we, the libertarian community as a whole, have to go out and defend Ron Paul and try to explain what this is that he's talking about. Yes, I know there's no free money. Yes, I know you actually have to pay for the stuff you buy from Walmart. I understand that. That's not what Ron Paul meant. And it's up to us to explain this. And if we can't, or if there's people who don't hear this explanation, then what do they think about Ron Paul? They think he's a nut. Because they know that money that they're buying the stuff from Walmart that's made in China is not free money. They worked for it. Now, again, we in the libertarian community can explain what it is that Ron Paul's talking about. But this man is supposed to be our spokesman. This man is the best that we've got, that we've put out for the public to vote for the presidency of the United States. And he doesn't explain himself any better than that. And let's go back to his books. Oh, but he does an excellent job in his books. Yeah. But he has really good ghostwriters, too. Now, let me take a shot at Michael Moore, because he's a much easier target than Ron Paul. Okay, so Michael Moore is on this CNN show with Piers Morgan. And Piers Morgan asks him a couple questions. And Michael Moore says, well, you know, this is... Piers Morgan basically says, haven't you gotten rich because of capitalism? Isn't that, and Piers Morgan says this phrase, is that not a kind of capitalism? He says, a kind of capitalism? I guess that's kind of like Ron Paul's reference earlier to being kind of pregnant. You know, either it's capitalism or it's not. These fuzzy definitions that we have decided to accept. Like, let's take anarchism for a minute. Anarchism means that you don't have an authority over you, inflicting violence upon you to cause you to behave in a certain way. That's what anarchy is about. And then we have these guys out here that are dressed in hoods and they have black flags and they're throwing Molotov cocktails and the media is calling them anarchists and they call themselves anarchists and you find out, what is it you want? What is it? Why is it you're out here protesting? Why is it that you're throwing Molotov cocktails in London and burning things? And they say, because the government's cutting back on our benefits and making us pay more for school. That's not anarchy. Those people are not anarchists. Why do we accept that definition? Why do we step back and allow these words to be perverted to mean something that they don't mean just to satisfy these liars who are taking on these titles and using these words in whatever way that they want to use them to describe whatever it is they want to describe? No. No, peers. It's not a kind of capitalism. When someone produces a product and they put it out and someone else finds that product and decides to pay money for it, that's not a kind of capitalism. That is capitalism. It's not complicated. So, Michael Moore's answer to this question, well, he says, I do well. I'm blessed. I'm fortunate that people want to see my movies. Well, now that's a typical stupid leftist way of viewing things. Al Gore once, this was way back in the early 90s, made the comment, I wish I had looked this up. If I'd have thought of it earlier, I would have looked it up and put it in my notes so it would be a correct quote. But he said something to the effect of that the rich people were fortunate, that the reason why these people, these super rich out there, are so rich is because they're fortunate and they should share their fortunate blessings on the rest of those of us who are less fortunate, see? Well, of course, Al Gore, who is unbelievably rich, doesn't actually do that, but he wants people to. But that's not true. It's not that you're blessed. It's not that you're fortunate. That's not true. You produced a product. People wanted the product. They gave you money for the product. That's not blessed. That's not fortunate. That's buying and selling and trading, and that's capitalism. Then Michael Moore goes on to say, the only reason I do well is because people want to see my movies, and blah, blah, blah. He says, not like the olden days. He says, we have to talk about capitalism in its current sense, not Adam Smith's way, and then blah, 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 he talks some more, and then he goes off yakking about people. He says, in the olden days, somebody invented light bulb, and that was cool, and everybody made money off of it, and everybody worked, and that was all good. And then Piers Morgan asks him, well, where did we go wrong? Well, Michael Moore doesn't know. But Michael Moore says, here's where it's wrong. We reward people for making money off of money and moving money around. And again, he just blah, blah, blah. He says, it's a shell game that no one knows where this cash is coming from. Now, let me translate for that. When Michael Moore says no one knows where the cash is coming from, what he really means is he doesn't know how the system works. So he just assumes it's evil. He doesn't actually know. So he assumes nobody knows. Well, if nobody knows, how are they making money off of it? And then Michael Moore goes on to say, there's nothing wrong with you or me or anyone here making a dollar for working hard, being rewarded for that. Nobody has ever been against that. were against greed and against the fact that 1% could get 9 slices of the pie and the other 99% are supposed to fight over that last slice. And then he goes, blah, 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 democracy, religion, blah, 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 this is sinful. What an idiot. What an idiot. I'm rubbing my head. You can't see that, but I'm rubbing my head because I feel like just trying to process the stupidity of this man. Okay, I'm going to read that slowly this time. There's nothing wrong with you or me or anyone here making a dollar for working hard, being rewarded for that. Nobody has ever been against that. We're against greed and against the fact that 1% could get 9 slices of the pie and the other 99 are supposed to fight over the last slice. Now, there's all kinds of fallacies involved here, but let's go back to the beginning. He says, there's nothing wrong with you or me or any of us making a dollar for working hard. So Michael Moore is making this distinction between those of us who work for money and those of us who just shuffle money around, and somehow mysteriously, he doesn't know how, but in his mind, this shuffling of money around is somehow evil when it makes money. So, of course, what he's talking about is investors and banking and this kind of things that he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand it, therefore it must be evil. So Michael Moore's ultimate solution in all this stuff is the same as John Stuart's ultimate solution in all this stuff. It's to somehow look to the benevolent government and hope that they can somehow fix this. Like, what have they been doing so far? Where have they been for the last 100 years? Have they not been making this situation happen the whole time? Should we then go back to the mechanic once again and say, I know, you took all my money this for the last 100 years. You keep taking my money over and over and over, and you keep not fixing my car, but please, this time, fix my car. Is that what we should do? Doctor, I know I've been to you 20 times to fix the pain in my arm, but it still hurts. Can you fix the pain in my arm this time? Is that what we should do? Should we just keep repeating the same mistake over and over, or should we look for a different solution? What do you think? What do you think is more logical? We, being the libertarian and the liberty movement as a whole, anarchists, minarchists, however you classify yourself, sit down and think these things through clearly and logically, and you'll realize that there's one problem. And that one problem is not corporations. That one problem is not the Federal Reserve. That one problem is not the clowns in Congress. The problem is the state. The state. I've been using this phrase over and over and over for the last couple months. The state is the puppet master. Everything else that you guys are striking at, it's all just puppets dancing on strings. You're getting distracted by the thing that's out there for the purpose of distracting you. And you're not seeing who's pulling the strings. As long as there's the state, as long as the state dangles these things in front of you, the problems are going to persist. You have to look beyond the corporations, look beyond the banks, look beyond the Federal Reserve, look beyond Congress, look beyond any specific tyrant or leader or president or dictator. Look beyond them and see what it is that controls these strings. And that thing, that is the state. Step out of that system. Get your mind free of that. And you begin to see these things for what they really are. And then you just start to understand that Ron Paul, as president, is not going to help us because the state will still be there. And if Ron Paul could magically become president and shrink the government down to the point of where Washington, D.C. is a toothless lion and each individual state within the United States has its own jurisdiction back to where it's strong again, and we have this odd confederacy that's never really worked out before, but we hope it will this time, so that each state is strong enough to stand up to Washington, then what you're going to have is you're going to have 50 states, and the state will still be there. It will still be the state. You take the state, you paint it any color you want, you put new wheels on it, it's still the state. You're going to go right back to that doctor and ask him to fix your arm again. You're going to take your car right back to the same mechanic and hope that he fixes it this time. And when he doesn't, are you going to take it back again? We cannot look to government or anyone, any person in government to fix what is wrong with government. We can't look to anyone in the state to try to fix the state. We have to let the state follow its course. We can't do anything to keep the state alive one more minute than it has to be. We have to pull away from the state. Private trading, private exchanges. I'm not putting any backing behind any specific type of monetary exchange, but we have to find a way to have monetary exchange without the state involved. We have to be able to communicate without the state involved. We have to have open and free trade without the state involved. And if that means for a period of time, more and more has to go underground, more and more black markets have to rise up, then that's what we have to do. We have to pull our allegiance away from the state. We have to go underground. We have to communicate underground. We have to trade underground. Everything. Until the time comes that the state itself dies. And then we win. And we won't win by election. The masses will never vote this in because the masses will never understand the bigger problem. And it doesn't matter. We can't sit back and wait for a John Wayne, for the cavalry to come charging in and save us from the state. That's the opposite of the individualism that libertarianism is based on. We have to fix this problem one person at a time. And the one person is me. You have to fix it in your life. I have to fix it in my life. I have to separate myself from the state. I have to separate myself from dependency upon the systems of the state. I have to work out a way to communicate and to trade and to function in society without the state. And each of us does. And all of us do. And when we do, the state won't matter. For more articles and podcasts on liberty, the Zero Aggression Principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. And thank you for listening.